Laudator Jesus Christus, Vatican and World News.
In the headlines this Friday, the 21st of February, Palestinian activists share the harsh reality Christians face in the West Bank. And we look at the efforts of Catholic relief organizations in providing a lifeline to those in need in Ukraine. But first, an update on Pope Francis's improving health. In the Vatican, I'm Francesca Merlo. Here is the update from the Holy See Press Office on Friday, February 21st, regarding Pope Francis's health. I quote, "The night went well, and this morning Pope Francis got up and had breakfast," end quote. Thursday night's communication reported that Pope Francis's clinical condition since his hospitalization at the Gemelli Hospital in Rome on February 14th is showing slight improvement with no fever and stable hemodynamic parameters. According to available information, the Pope has some localized focal pneumonia, but continues to breathe independently and his heart remains strong. The High Court of England and Wales has ruled against financier Raffaele Mincione in his case against the Holy See's Secretariat of State. Mincione sued the Vatican at the High Court in London, claiming he was unfairly convicted by the Holy See over a UK property deal in which the Vatican lost a lot of money. As Interpol Donia reports, an English judge ruled Mincione did not act in good faith.
The High Court of England and Wales on Friday published its ruling on the legal proceedings initiated by Italian financier Raffaele Mincione in 2020 against the Secretariat of State in an attempt to halt the investigation launched by the Vatican's promoter of justice. The court found that Mincione and his companies did not meet the standards of good faith in their dealings with the Vatican, particularly regarding the 2018 sale of a London property at No. 60 Sloane Avenue. Judge Robin Knowles determined that Mincione had made misleading statements about the property's value and prioritised his own interests over those of the Secretariat of State. The ruling aligns with previous decisions by the Vatican Tribunal, which had already convicted Mincione of financial crimes, sentencing him to 5 years and 6 months in prison and ordering the confiscation of £200.5 million. The court also addressed the role of broker Gianluigi Torzi, finding his actions improper and dishonest in handling Vatican investments. Vatican promoter of justice Alessandro Didi welcomed the decision, stating that it reaffirms the findings of the Vatican courts and confirms that Mincione failed to act with the professional integrity expected in such financial transactions. I'm Linda Bordoni.
In other Vatican news, the fourth major event of the Jubilee of Hope kicks off today and is dedicated to deacons. From February 21st to the 23rd, 4,000 deacons will be in Rome to pass through the Holy Door and participate in a series of meetings. The Jubilee will conclude with Mass presided over by the Pro-Prefect of the Dicastery for Evangelization, Archbishop Rino Fisichella, on Sunday the 23rd of February in St. Peter's Basilica. While the ongoing war waged by Russia against Ukraine continues to displace and endanger millions of people, the unwavering efforts of Catholic relief organizations continue to provide a lifeline to those in need. Among them is the Pontifical Foundation Aid to the Church in Need, who is also focusing on the much-needed pastoral and spiritual needs of the local faithful and clergy. Lisa Zingarini reports.
According to a statement released this week, since Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine in 2022, Aid to the Church in Need has allocated over 25 million euros to various humanitarian and pastoral projects, sustaining both the Greek Catholic and Latin Catholic churches. The ongoing war has deeply impacted the daily lives of clergy and faithful alike, and over time the Pontifical Foundation has shifted its priorities from helping internally displaced persons to providing subsistence support for priests and nuns, seminarian training, trauma care, and transportation assistance. In 2024 alone, ACN extended its support to nearly 1,500 priests, over 1,300 religious sisters, 60 religious brothers, and 19 deacons. Additionally, 768 seminarians received assistance for their formation. Beyond spiritual support, ACN has also facilitated practical assistance. The German-based foundation has helped establish 4 psycho-spiritual support centres and finance the purchase of 58 vehicles, which serve both pastoral and humanitarian purposes. 2 of these vehicles have been repurposed as mobile chapels to bring religious services to people in contested regions. Moreover, ACN has provided funds for reconstruction efforts. Bishop Maxim Briabuka of the Donetsk Exarchate has expressed profound gratitude to ACN, stating that without their aid, the church in Ukraine might not have survived. Similarly, Bishop Stanislav Shirkorajuk of Odessa underscored the significance of ongoing international solidarity, emphasizing that the people of Ukraine don't feel alone thanks to the prayers and support of their global Christian community. I am Lisa Zengarini.
In an update on the diplomatic relations in the area, the US envoy for the war in Ukraine, Keith Kellogg, said on Friday he had extensive and positive discussions on Thursday with President Volodymyr Zelensky. Kellogg said on X he also had talks with Zelensky's, quote, talented national security team, end quote, while on his visit to the Ukrainian capital. Turning now to news from the Middle East, and in particular the war between Israel and Hamas. Israeli Defense Minister Israel Katz has ordered an escalation of military raids in refugee camps across the occupied West Bank. Nathan Morley reports.
This move follows a series of bus explosions in central Tel Aviv, which caused no injuries. No group has claimed responsibility for the explosions yet. Mr. Katz stated the intensified raids would focus on the Tulkram refugee camp and others in the West Bank. Israel's Kan TV reports that the Shin Bet domestic security agency is now investigating whether the perpetrators came from Tulkram. A sticker was found on one of the explosives devices, which suggested the attack was revenge for recent Israeli raids, which caused widespread destruction. In the attack, 3 empty buses exploded within minutes, and explosive devices were found on 2 other buses, prompting a temporary nationwide suspension of all public transportation. In a related development, Israel has announced that forensic analysis has confirmed a body received from Hamas was not that of the hostage Shiri Bibas. The remains of Bibas, along with her 2 children, were supposedly handed over at the weekend. The Israeli military stated the identification process revealed the body was not of any known hostage and accused Hamas of breaching the ceasefire agreement. The remains of Bibas' sons, however, Ariel, aged 4, and Kefir, who's just 10 months, were identified. They were kidnapped from their home in Kibbutz Nir Oz. Additionally, the body of another hostage, Oded Lifshitz, a retired journalist and peace activist, was formally identified earlier today. Meanwhile, Hamas on Friday said that it had no interest in not committing to the Gaza ceasefire deal in response to the Israeli accusations. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu announced on Friday that Israel would seek revenge against Hamas, noting that they would ensure that Hamas pay the full price for this cruel and evil violation of the agreement. Under the terms of the ongoing 3-phase ceasefire agreement, which has been effective since January the 19, with the first phase spanning 6 weeks, Hamas is expected to release 6 living hostages on Saturday in exchange for hundreds more Palestinians who are detained in Israeli jails. For Vatican Radio, this is Nathan Morley reporting.
We heard Nathan there mentioning the ongoing prisoner exchange between Israel and Hamas. The Israeli hostages being released were individuals captured by Hamas during its October the 7th attack on Israel. But who exactly are the Palestinian detainees? Vatican Radio spoke to Palestinian human rights lawyer Sahar Francis, general director of the Adamir Prisoner Support and Human Rights Association, who explained that many of them had been imprisoned for years before the current war.
It didn't start on October 23. Hundreds of thousands of Palestinians were imprisoned, tortured, ill-treated, and the use of arbitrary detention by the administrative detention policy, arresting thousands without any trial, without fair procedures, arresting children. Tens of thousands of children in these decades were arrested, tortured, and ill-treated. And all these policies just intensified and became much horrible after the October war in Gaza. And it also in the mass arrest campaigns that the occupation forces are implementing on daily basis. Just tonight, they raided several villages and refugee camps in the occupied territories, and they arrested tens of Palestinians. While they are releasing, they are arresting others, or in some cases, they re-arrested children that they were released on November exchange deal. The situation of the prisoners inside the prisons are so difficult, like they're facing lots of violence, lots of attacks, physical attacks on daily basis into their rooms, in the sections, healthcare conditions that they are causing death of prisoners out of lack of health treatment.
That was Sahar Francis, General Director of Palestine's Adamir Prisoner Support and Human Rights Association, speaking there to Joseph Tullock. And meanwhile, while many Palestinians are being released from prison, others are living in what have been described as prison-like conditions in the town of Bethlehem. Vatican Radio's Joseph Tullock again spoke to the Reverend Munther Isaac, pastor of Bethlehem's Lutheran Church, about the situation in this historically Christian Palestinian town.
And Bethlehem, on top of all of that, is suffering so much economically. We depend so much on tourism. And since October 7th, we pretty much have no tourists. And many Bethlehemites used to work in Jerusalem, and Jerusalem is now almost completely blocked. The unemployment, according to recent studies, is more than 35% in Bethlehem. As churches, most of our work right now is supporting families survive. We try to do as much as we can, all the churches, but that doesn't mean that we're able to support everyone. And sadly, we estimate that more than 100 families, I'm talking about the Christian families, the ones I have, you know, we talk to the clergy all the time among ourselves. We estimate that more than 100 Christian families have left Bethlehem since October 7th. We're already a small community that's struggling to survive, and its policies and procedures like this make life unbearable. When you wait on checkpoints for hours every day, and when you pass through a checkpoint and the soldiers are pointing their guns at your children, and your children, you know, are traumatized by it. All of our, you know, have a whole generation of children traumatized by all of this. You just think of the future of your children and decide, why am I staying here? Many of us, of course, are determined to stay, but how much more can we survive in such very, very difficult situations? It's really, as I said, it's one of our darkest moments.
That was the Reverend Munther Isaac, the Palestinian writer and theologian, and the pastor of Bethlehem's Lutheran Church, speaking there to Vatican Radio's Joseph Tullock. And that brings us to the end of this edition of Vatican and World News. For more of these and other stories, please visit vaticannews.va, and don't forget to catch the latest updates on Facebook, X and Instagram. Many thanks today go to our sound engineer Gabriele Di Domenico in studio. In the Vatican, I'm Francesca Merlo.